Cancel culture goes beyond boycotting. That's according to Sherry Zeck, interim dean of Milner Library at Illinois State University and GLT's culture maven. She says canceling often starts in social media, a place where anyone with a smartphone and a Twitter account can take aim at injustice and also get a taste of power.
Someone says or does something that of which you disapprove or that is not within your value system, and so you cancel them. You stop following them on Twitter, you tell your friends to stop following them on Twitter, and it possibly becomes a thing and is large enough to alter that person's fan base or sphere of influence, largely in social media. But it also can become big enough that it actually can, say, cancel a TV show, like the Roseanne Barr situation.
What is the purpose, ultimately, of cancel culture? It seems that we have people on social media who have power that in years past people didn't have.
Well, I think people are genuinely trying to affect social change for the most part. Certainly, there are also plenty of people who just love to sound off and make themselves important. But I think that it comes from a genuine place where we want to have more control over what comes at us. And 30 years ago, when there were three TV stations and a lot of radio stations, we felt very out of power in terms of really affecting what was programmed in those areas. Now, a mass movement could have some effect, but it was very difficult to generate a mass movement at that time. Well, now with social media, anybody with a wiseacre line and a cute cat video could potentially reach thousands and thousands of people.
Recently, we had a call to cancel singer Kate Smith because some recordings that she had done in the early 1930s were highly objectionable. People today heard those songs and called to cancel Kate Smith. But also recently, there were calls to cancel Michael Jackson due to a documentary that came out
right,
and revealing some assault issues with minors. Now, the Kate Smith thing got traction, but Michael Jackson, that didn't seem to take hold. Why are some people canceled, but other people, the canceling just doesn't seem to take?
There are a lot of factors here, but just using your examples right there, how much money do you think Kate Smith stuff makes people right now versus how much money Michael Jackson stuff makes people? You know, I'm always going to say in the final instance it has to do with money, but it's not just about money. I'm sure there are folks out there who are defending Kate Smith and contextualizing her songs, and you know, she was just a singer, she didn't write it, was she under contract to sing these things, you know, blah, 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 blah. But all in all, half the population doesn't even know who she is. Michael Jackson still has some traction in popular culture. The charges against him are incredibly serious, but they're not new. There was a trial, and he was found innocent. So there's the story being told that comes from the documentary. There's the story that's being told by people who knew Jackson and believed him to be an honorable person. So those narratives are really competing with each other in this moment and in the context of his recordings still make a lot of money.
As you say, money has a lot to do with what does or does not get canceled. But why would somebody go to the lengths to dig up an old song by Kate Smith that was recorded, you know, 80 years ago, or an old interview with John Wayne that was in Playboy magazine? Don't we have enough to contend with today that we don't need to be bothered canceling people who are long dead?
First of all, historical research and historical accuracy has value in and of itself. So I think that there's a level of this that is about continuing the process of elucidating how entrenched and pervasive racism is in American culture. That's one way I would answer that. But the other way I would answer it is, I think in general, we find it much easier to get head up about and attack these relatively smaller matters than actually say, oh, I don't know, getting a racist out of the White House. I do think that we, by and large, many of us who are interested in social justice, get preoccupied and hung up on some of the smaller matters because the larger injustices are just so difficult to take down. So we take down what we can. Maybe that's the only way you take down the bigger injustices, is one small injustice at a time.
So when does a cultural artifact, movie, song, what have you, person, become so obsolete that it's an embarrassment to current generations?
At some level, it's never too old, as long as it's remembered. This radio station is within an educational institution. We are about resurrecting the past. We are about uncovering the past. We are about history and archaeology and all of those things. We're about not forgetting. And there's positive sides to that, and there are potential potholes to that. But in that regard, nothing is necessarily forgotten forever. I personally do think there are differences in terms of what is having a larger effect on the culture and therefore bears more scrutiny or perhaps cancellation, but it is sometimes the smaller things that people actually can control the existence and the outcome of, so that's what they go after.
It's power.
It's power. And one of the things that social media has afforded folks is sometimes an illusory sense of power, but sometimes real power. I mean, after all, it used to be that the people who were actually influencers in culture were celebrities on TV and in films, and politicians in a very different way. And so folks like you and me, maybe you because you're a radio personality, but folks like you and me had really little hope of affecting other people. But now, you know, I do a pen review on YouTube and I get 100 followers. Other people who do them regularly get thousands of followers for pen reviews. So once again, if you have a smart tagline and a cute cat video, you can become an influencer. We're still, as a culture, trying to figure out how that kind of power actually works.
So why do we cancel and not forgive? Why do we choose canceling over forgiving?
Because we confuse forgiving with condoning. Once we started to realize as a culture that everything was connected, that text didn't exist out here, but that they exist in a web of responses and how those responses circulate, that made all of us part of what things mean. So if I say, well, I like Kevin Spacey anyway, I'm still going to see his movies, then at some level, I become as culpable for his actions being dismissed as someone who actually lied for him. Just in terms of how Kevin Spaceyness and Kevin Spacey's actions get read as a text or a series of texts in the world. So for someone to just say, Kevin Spacey, it's over between us, slam the door, they're refusing to be part of that thing that his actions and what we think about his actions and what we say about his actions means in the world. But I also think one of the real dangers in this is that we confuse two drops of bad in a cup with water that is going to poison us all and kill us, right? We have to be able to tell the difference between a stray remark that I might say, not knowing all of the cultural history of a particular metaphor I use or something, and my actually denying a job to someone because of their race or gender identity. Those are not the same thing. They might be connected, they might have a joined history, but they're not the same thing. And one of the things that I think is happening is we're getting very samey-samey about everything. So someone actually abusing a child is starting to exist on the same level of approbation as someone saying to a five-year-old girl, you're pretty. There are issues with treating five-year-old girls in terms of how they look and only talking to them about their hair, but that is not the same thing as raping a five-year-old girl. If we're going to change this culture, we have to be able to be self-reflective and critique all of the bad things we do while still maintaining perspective.
What about the future for cancel culture? I mean, do you see it continuing along this line? Do you see any looming trends?
I hate to say this, but it's going to wear out. Generations change in terms of how they use technology, and it's happening at a faster rate than we might imagine. So I think there will be new ways of communicating that will come in. And also, as a culture, we get exhausted by stuff really easy. We'll turn our attention to other things. Also, there will be resistance. There will be backlash. There will be resistance.
That's Sherry Zeck, Interim Dean of Milner Library at Illinois State University and GLT's culture maven. Another female artist from the early 20th century has been singled out by cancel culture. Last week, Bowling Green State University removed the name of actress Lillian Gish from its theater after students questioned acknowledging the actress, who starred in the 1915 D.W. Griffith film Birth of a Nation, a movie widely criticized for its racist themes. A new name for the theater remains undecided. I'm Laura Kennedy.